Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, the latest on health and healing. Some people were concerned when false information was spread around that taking a multiple vitamin wasn't good for you, could even hurt you. Well, we have looked at all the evidence, and I'll tell you what the good news is on that. For women who are deciding should they breastfeed or not, it's all about the bacteria, and the formulas don't have good bacteria. Breast milk, it's got a lot of good bacteria, over 700 species of bacteria in breast milk. Also, want to know how you can add 3 years to your lifespan? Now, mind you, this is just the bare minimum you can add. I'll tell you about that. And also, 4 reasons diets fail. So I'll get to that. From our environmental segment, if you remember about 3 years ago, I did a program that's on our archives on the 12 tipping points. Most people are not aware of any of the tipping points. They'll say, oh, global warming. Global warming is really not in and of itself a tipping point, but there are tipping points, and we're already tipping in form. We won't be able to reverse it. I said at that time that one of the most beautiful cities in the world, architecturally, Dubai, would no longer be habitable because it's at sea level. In fact, in an act of pure hubris, the architects from around the world built little fan islands, like a palm fan, with just a tiny barrier reef, a man-made barrier reef. All that's going to be undone. But also, more than 65 million people will no longer be able to live in safety and in a quality of life within the next 2 to 3 years. Because the water is rising. Today I'm just going to focus on one. Jakarta, big city, 10 million people just downtown. It's sinking, and it's flooding, and that's now. Also, we have an Environmental Protection Agency. The current director has resigned. Of course, they're not going to tell why they resigned, but this was a person that really wanted to have some stricter rules in place. The powers behind the White House don't want that. In fact, the EPA actually allows uranium mining that pumps toxic waste into drinking water. I'll give you the latest on that. And if you're like myself, you enjoy going to the woods. We have some of the most beautiful forests in the world here in the United States. Even in New York State, where I'm broadcasting from, some great Adirondacks and Catskills and mountain ranges. I noticed about 3 years ago things were changing. When I hike at high altitudes. I like to do a spiritual rebalancing once a year. We're alone with just water and nothing else. No tent, sleeping bags, nothing. No food, I fast. I go into nature and I try to rebalance myself and get perspective. And then when looking around, especially at the 10, 12,000 foot level, you start to see something. Historic trees that were always full, the evergreens, are dying. Well, there's a reason why, and now it's making news. As the climate warns, bark beetles march on high elevation forests and are decimating them. We're not talking about a little problem, we're talking about a major problem. I'll deal with that. One, possibly two commentaries today, time permitting. From Stephen Strauss of the Huffington Post, is our republic ending? It's short. But what he does, Stephen compares the fall of the Roman Empire with the fall of the American Empire. And indeed, we are falling. I realize there are those who say, well, nobody should talk negative about anything we're doing because then it only encourages. Encourages what? I believe that we must be completely honest about our current state of affairs. And not just focus upon feel-good news. We can spend our time looking at people who are very successful in the lifestyles that they have accumulated, and that's a convenient distraction. But for every wealthy person that has a yacht, a mansion, a jet, is hosting a big party at a nightclub, I'll show you a million Americans who are not. So I'm going to talk about that. And then if there's still time, from Peter Wierzycki from the Washington Post, antidepressants to treat grief. Excuse me. When did grief become a psychological condition that requires medication? Well, when it can be used to sell product, like antidepressant drugs, and when you can label it as psychiatric disorder, and you put it into the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual number 5, the Bible of Psychiatry, which itself is a completely fraudulent, 100% fraudulent, completely unscientific comic book. But the trouble is, it's a very powerful comic book. In psychiatry, talk therapy is fine, but everything else they do is simply wrong. It's amazing what happens when you simplify things to their true value. Does psychiatry really help us? The answer is no. They get the diagnosis wrong, they get the treatment wrong, but they have the power of the court behind them. So I'm going to talk about why we should not accept grief as a mental disorder requiring prescription medication, because we're all going to go through grief many times in our life. When a cat dies, a dog dies, when a friend dies, when a relative dies, when a personal family member dies, when we lose our job, when our career ends. A lot of reasons for grief. I'll talk about that. Let's begin. We have a lot to share. About every 3 months for the past 5 years or so, there has been some article that is just printed all over and reported in the media about why vitamins are not good for you. Without exception, not a single exception, they have been wrong. The man who said, vitamin C might cause cancer. Indeed, he did not say vitamin C causes cancer. But you wouldn't have known that reading the newspapers. You would have had to have gone to the University of Pennsylvania or Pittsburgh, and you would have had to look at a study to show he was merely doing a study in a test tube to found that one of the breakdown stages of vitamin C creates some chemical. But beyond that, it was falsely extrapolated. So we go on the air, we do our research, and we show you the truth. This is the latest. Multiple vitamins do not increase mortality risk. Now, this is in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. A daily multiple vitamin does not cause a problem. And there were some controversial statements about this. Writing in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, scientists from Swinburne University of Technology report that multiple vitamin mineral use did not affect the risk of mortality from cancer or vascular causes. In addition, a trend was observed for reducing risk of all causes of death. And what they did, they looked at all these, and they found that you actually benefit from this. There were 66 separate randomized trials that were analyzed. And the end result, the nutrients, especially the antioxidants, make a big difference to your betterment, not to your detriment. Now, we all want to live a longer and healthier life. The trouble is, not everybody does what is necessary to do that. For example, the latest studies that I have found show that being a healthy vegan can add about 9.6 years to your life by itself. Taking the right supplements at the right level, including the antioxidants, that can add another 5 years. Reducing your resting pulse rate 10 to 15% can also add years onto your life, because every organ in your body has a clock. There's a biological clock. So if your heart is beating normally, sitting there, and if you take your pulse right now, let's say it's beating at 80 beats per minute, well, that means that you're not going to be living as long as someone whose heart is beating 60 beats a minute. In fact, you'll probably live 10 to 12 years shorter. Therefore, exercising And diet brings down your pulse, mainly exercise. Hence, exercising is good for the heart, extends the lifespan of the heart. The latest here shows that just 15 minutes of daily exercise will add 3 years to your heart. Let me quote this from Susan Patterson of Natural Society. It says, "In our inactive society, most people simply aren't exercising enough to support their own health. However, contrary to what some people may think, findings show that just 15 minutes of daily exercise can increase life expectancy by 3 years, while cutting your risk of all causes of death by 14%. This is good news for many who claim not to have enough time to exercise." By the way, this was published in the peer-reviewed journal The Lancet, and they looked at 400,000 individuals and looked at their disease rate, their death rate, how much time they exercise, and that's where they came up with this. So here is the deal. We know that the more you juice, the healthier your body is, if it's healthy juice. We know when you give up bad things, you free your body from the excess inflammation. Inflammation that is inflammatory to your heart, your lungs, your brain, your eyes, your liver, your kidneys, your spleen, your pancreas, and your musculature. The trouble is, we're not told the truth, and here is the truth. Any item that is inflammatory to every cell in your body. But you won't manifest inflammation in a negative way all at the same time. So you can create inflammation in your legs and your musculature for a long time before you have to pay the price for it. In your joints, that's where a lot of people start to see the inflammation response first, swelling, pain, redness, but you won't feel and you won't see, and there's no way to accurately measure the inflammation in your brain that's laying down a particular type of plaque that ultimately leads to dementia, memory loss, and Alzheimer's. It's called an amyloid plaque. You won't see or feel the oxidative stress and inflammation that leads to oxidative stress in your eye, and that in turn leads to glaucoma, macular degeneration, and cataracts. Nor in your pancreas from all the sugar and alcohol that you take that ends up causing inflammation in the pancreas, which can adversely affect insulin production, but also can cause abnormal cells, which can lead to pancreatic cancer, or in your prostate, etc. Where every time you drink coffee, you're creating gastric reflux potential because the coffee has a particular pH, and your stomach acid has a pH, and they're incompatible. So when you drink coffee, you're causing a reaction, the coffee, with your stomach acid, which frequently allows the stomach acid to regurgitate back into the sensitive mucous membranes and of your throat and your esophagus. This is why esophageal cancer is the fastest rising cancer in the Western Hemisphere. And it also can upset your digestion. It can take nutrients you've taken right out of the system. It's a diuretic, and it can dehydrate you. Think how many people take their vitamins in the morning with coffee. Big mistake. And then have soda drink later in the day with additional caffeine. So when you turn off inflammation and you start drinking clean juices and clean water and eating clean food and healthy food, that's also adding years onto your life. So there's every reason to believe that you should add about, if you're 50 years old now, you should be able to add about 15 to 20 good years, quality years, to the aging process. And also slow down the aging process substantially. Breast milk, we know, should be the preferred food of all babies. The mother creates antibodies and gives it through the milk to the baby, so the baby starts to develop an immune system. Doesn't get that with formula. This is one more reason to breastfeed. This is in the Higher Public Health Research Center and the Institute of Agrochemistry and Food Technology. Here's what it says. Spanish researchers have traced the bacteria microbiota map in breast milk, which is often the main source of nourishment for newborns. The study has revealed a larger microbial diversity than originally thought. More than 700 different species of good bacteria. The breast milk received from the mother is one of the factors determining how the bacteria flora will develop in the newborn baby. And a group of Spanish scientists have now used a technique based on massive DNA sequencing to identify the set of bacteria contained within breast milk called the microbiome. And thanks to their study, pre- and postnatal variables influencing microbial richness of milk can now be determined. Now, we know that colostrum is the first milk that a mare, a cow, a sow, a fawn, they all get this or give this to their offspring, and it's the first secretion of the mammary glands after giving birth. And in some of the samples taken of that liquid, colostrum, more than 700 species of these microorganisms were found, which is more than anyone had believed. This is published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Now, why is this important? Because when I'm counseling a pregnant woman, in an ideal situation, and I realize that a lot of pregnancies are not planned, but where you're planning your pregnancy, I give people the following advice. First, detoxify your body, as well as your partner should detoxify. Doing it together would be great. Fat stores chemicals and toxins and heavy metals and pesticides and herbicides and all these terrible things we don't want in our body because we don't want them going through the placenta into the developing fetus, especially mercury. So I ask people, get rid of all the mercury fillings, silver fillings. Then have a heavy metal test taken, which is easy and inexpensive, so we know how much heavy metal you have, so you can do natural chelation. You can do suppository chelation, intravenous chelation, EDTA, ethylamine, diamine tetracetic acid. You can do food chelation using garlic and onion and chlorophyll, chlorella, wheatgrass juice, spirulina, vitamin C. These are all natural chelators. And ideally, I'd like to see a person detoxify for about a year before conception, in an ideal situation. And then when pregnant, seeing that their body has the nutrients to help the developing fetus. Now that means that a woman should have no alcohol of any kind, no smoking, no pharmaceuticals, no tranquilizers. All of those are going to end up going into the developing fetus. If a mother ends up getting vaccinated, the vaccine and the pathogens can go right into the developing fetus. And we've seen this. In fact, where we didn't see it in the fetus directly, initially, it was in the umbilical cord, loaded with toxins. But we know that mercury will go right through. And in any amount, it's going to adversely affect the brain. Now, we have an epidemic of neurological disorders in the United States in young people. On a curve, some are barely noticeable, but others are extreme. So detoxification is one of the ways we help the fetus. So then, once the baby is born, the mother will know which oils to take to increase the nutritional value and the protection of the baby when the baby takes the mother's breast milk. Therefore, I would put them on a gluten-free diet, a dairy-free diet, give them anti-inflammatories. All that is then blended, conjugated, and taken by the mother as her metabolism and then passed on to the baby. Even vitamin C can make all the difference in the world. And finally, the top four reasons why diets fail. Because let's face it, we have an awful lot of people who are always on a diet. And more often than not, even the most popular diets, where they may initially work, they fail. I believe that instead of diets, we should be focused upon lifestyle modification. Here are the four primary reasons given in a new study that was published by the Loyola Center for Metabolic Surgery and Bariatric Care. First, understanding calories consumed. What's that mean? It means that most people, even experts, underestimate the number of calories they eat each day. So people forget that when they have a little snack or they have a bite of something or they're just tasting something, it's still calories. You have to pay attention to serving sizes. And that's why you have to really be conscious on this. There's nutritional information available that tells you the caloric size. Every can that you buy has to tell you the total calories and then how many calories per serving. Now, I think this is very important because the myth that calories don't count was perpetrated by people who are on the high-protein diet. It does count. I was watching yesterday. I was just looking at how many different cooking shows actually told people the calories that are in the food they're making and, more importantly, what those calories mean, because they're all empty calories. Not a single program did that. They focused instead upon the uniqueness of the food, how large a portion it was, the supersized concept, and how good it tasted, and how people in these different environments loved it. Well, the reality is the average American, overeats everything and really overeats unhealthy things, and hence is obese, and then doesn't exercise enough. Now, the things you can supersize, in fact, I have seen some people now eating some new supersized sandwiches, but what is supersized? Microgreens, sprouts, like sunflower sprouts, or alfalfa sprouts, buckwheat sprouts, fenugreek sprouts, a lot of good sprouts, and especially the radish and daikon, which are highly cruciferous, but also tomato. Having a larger slice of tomato is all good. Having a larger slice of sweet onion, phenomenal for you. And if you're going to have something like a hummus, that's great, because if you put some lemon juice in there, some olive oil or coconut oil, and some mustard, make it really tasty. It's great for digestion, but also very little calories, but it really fills you up. And then get yourself some sprouted bread so you're not getting the gluten, because the sprouted bread doesn't have the gluten. So people on a wheat-free diet, they can have that. Now, then you're going to have a nice-sized sandwich, big enough to have it twice a day, or two people, but it's not a lot of calories, and it's all good. Cucumber, good. Avocado that does have some calories, but it's the good fats that our body needs. But one way that you can make a great sandwich and make it really be filling, that is medicinal, it's actually a functional sandwich, is to have a big, thick portobello mushroom. Now, how I make my portobellos, I get a whole cap of portobello, sometimes two, and I scrub the top under water and get rid of all the surface grime, molds, and anything else. Then I take a knife and I cut off the black bottom and the core out, and then just press out a little water. What you're left with is an extremely nutritious and highly delicious food. Now, more medicinal value is going to be released when you lightly saute it. So if you saute this with a big serving of onions and garlic and your portobello and whatever spices you like, and then you take that and you put that on some really good thick romaine lettuce, organic romaine, and then you put your portobello down and then put a slice of the vegan sharp cheddar cheese, which is non-dairy, and then put mustard on that, then put a big tomato on top of that, then put a raw onion on top of that, then microgreens and sprouts, and then drizzle some balsamic vinegar on that and put that. That is a huge sandwich, generally big enough for two people, low in calories, all good for you. So when you get the idea that the average American's eating all bad all the time and is sick all the time, there's a moment we can use this to our advantage. Also, we overestimate activity and calories burn. Here's how it works. Typically, you need to cut 500 calories per day to lose 1 pound per week. It's 3,500 calories in excess of your body weight, and you lose a pound. And for the average person, it's not exercising. That's almost impossible. But if you exercise, as I'm suggesting, vigorously for 60 minutes a day, it's entirely possible. So at the end of a week of vigorous exercise and while watching your caloric intake, you're going to lose weight. In fact, I received a letter today from a person who said that I wouldn't have believed it until I came to a retreat last year where you said, eat all you want. And the food was so good, and we had Claire Adams and Cindy and all these people doing all this food prep, and they're all very good chefs, and people wanted to try everything. Well, when you're making 2 to 3 entrees, 2 salads, 1 to 2 side dishes, 1 to 2 desserts, and people are trying this with different dips, you think, whoa, I'm going to blow up like a balloon. Everybody loses weight. In fact, I had people weigh themselves on the first day and weigh themselves on the last day. The average loss of weight was 7 pounds in 1 week, and yet they ate a lot. The key is that when you're eating healthy living food, with high fiber, there is low caloric density. And that's the key. When you're eating animal proteins, it's high caloric density. The calories in a piece of meat are extensive. The calories in a salad are negligible. So you can eat all the salads you want. And a lot of fruit is also negligible. And the fiber in the fruit allows it to be going through the system where you don't get a lot of the caloric absorption. So as long as you're eating well, and exercising, you're not going to have a weight problem at all. Also, I find that it's important to start today with a liquid breakfast, have your main meal in the early afternoon, and a small meal in the evening. That's the ideal. Also, most people eat too late at night. That's a problem. The food's going to be in your stomach when you go to bed. Now, you have to understand what the stomach looks like. It's like a pear on its side. The trouble is that there's no real way for the food to go up and over into the pyloric sphincter and into the intestine in any adequate way. So a lot of the food that you eat in the evening, it's still in your stomach in the morning. And that's not good. You want to be able to have a good meal and have it go through you and get into digestion, absorption. Having a little walk, having a siesta, taking a break, all that facilitates good digestion. Also, if you're going to have something at the end of a meal, don't have dessert. Have a piece of papaya. Chew on bits of the center of a pineapple. That provides you with papain, provides you with different enzymes, bromelain, that are extremely good for digestion, and also turn off inflammation in the process. If you don't have anything else, an apple for dessert is a great dessert. And also, people are not sleeping enough. And when you don't sleep, studies have shown that people who get fewer than 6 hours a night have higher levels of ghrelin, G-H-R-E-L-I-N, which is a hormone that stimulates appetite, particularly for high-carbohydrate, high-caloric food. Well, let's face it, that also means that you're going to be stressing your system, which is going to increase cortisol, a stress hormone, which can cause you to have gain weight. So we need to take our time eating, eat portions, and if you really want something at night, eat something that doesn't have nutrient density, like a caloric density, but rather has good taste, good fiber, and good chlorophyll, but not within 3 hours going to bed. Finally, from a health and nutrition segment today, 97% of the children affected by the mumps outbreak were vaccinated. This is one more challenge to the industry that claims to have good science on its side. It does not. I will be publishing an article tomorrow on our website. It's about the flu vaccine. I will show you the truth about the efficacy and safety of the flu vaccine. And if there are lawyers in this audience, which I know there are, or people who believe that they've been harmed by the flu vaccine, I will show you that the major manufacturers of the vaccines, including the flu vaccine, had pre-knowledge that their vaccines lack safety and efficacy. Now, why is that important? Because they managed to get themselves identified in case there's lawsuits for damage that occurs. But that's all with the provision that there was no fraud involved. If it can be shown that there was prior knowledge of doing harm and they went ahead to make a profit in spite of that, then class action suits can commence. I'll be providing the documentation for those class action suits tomorrow. And once again, showing that the safety and efficacy issue of vaccines is not discussed with any legitimacy except by independent scientists. This is from Reuters. And it talked... this is separate. Anyhow, the research that I have shows that all those kids had all their vaccines. Well, if the vaccines are protective, why is it they came down with the measles? But then they did the same thing with mumps. The kids who got mumps all had been vaccinated. And whooping cough, they had been vaccinated. So clearly, the American public has been lied to and manipulated by a completely corrupt U.S. Public Health Service. Back in a moment, and then talk back. This is the segment of our program where you have an opportunity to call in and share your comments and thoughts and positions. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Have a lot to share. Please stay with us. With us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Talk back now. We'll be taking calls for the remainder of the program on any issue that you find important. 888-874-4888. Yesterday, a gentleman was in our office here in mid-Manhattan on the Upper West Side, and I was walking out, and he said, "Gary, can I have a moment with you?" I said, "Sure." He said, "I just thought you'd like to know that I was listening to your programs about what if. What if we have a natural disaster by a rising sea level, warming of the ocean, and increase tidal surges, increase hurricane surges? It's going to knock out an awful lot of people and destroy their homes who had never before had that happen." And my father has recently passed, and we have a third generational estate out in on Long Island. And I was thinking, what should we do? Because we're right on the water. It's a beautiful place. And he decided to sell it. Now, this was not universally supported by his family. But he was the executor of the estate, and he said, "What if Gary is right? And what if he's wrong?" He sold his two homes and unloaded all this stuff from all those years, and is relocating. 2 weeks later, Sandy happened, and his homes were washed out to the ocean, destroyed. He said, "Had I not listened, wouldn't have known, and I would be devastated today." He said, "Instead, I'm glad I got a heads up. I wonder how many other people in the audience did the same thing." That said, I will put it as diplomatically as I believe is necessary. We're all of us feel great compassion and sensitivity to those who had loss, we must also be realistic. I believe that everyone in the lower Ninth Ward should be moved out of down in Louisiana. I believe that we, the people, have a moral responsibility to build a wonderful living environment with parks and schools, public schools, a free clinic, health clinic, counseling services, cultural institutions, and good quality living, and allow these people to no longer ever again be in harm's way. Otherwise, it is inevitable that after spending over $40 billion on raising the levees down there, that if there's a category 4 or 5 storm, which is inevitable to happen, everything that happened with Katrina will happen all over again except be worse. And if you have been there, as I have many times, you'll see that almost nothing has been done of any meaning for the vast majority of people. Yes, they have that street where Habitat for Humanity has done a really good job, and I commend them, and Brad Pitt, I commend him for jumping in and funding. But you're talking about thousands of homes, and you're talking about under 100 that have been rehabbed. But still, the environment itself is below sea level. Now, the same I say is true for all those who lost their homes in Hurricane Sandy. I believe that we, as a society, should work on helping these people to rebuild. And I believe that we should have a place that is safe to rebuild, and then rebuild it, and to help these individuals. I believe the insurance companies would be able to help, but that's not what's going to happen. Instead, everyone's going to want to go back and rebuild where they were. All these homes that are going to be rebuilt will all be destroyed again, and more lives will be lost, and more suffering. And I believe at some point we just have to stop this idea that we have to double down and show that we're tough and we'll do it better next time. You can't do it better. All the studies show that global warming is speeding up the warming of the Arctic and the Antarctic. And the Antarctic has increased by over 5 degrees, more than any place else on the planet. As a result, you have warming from the bottom of Antarctica, the ice sheets there on the glaciers, and on the top. You have the same thing in Greenland. If you could imagine Greenland, which is huge, about 3 times the size of Texas with 2 miles of ice, but it's at a slant, and there are so many thousands and thousands of lakes that occur every year when the ice melts, and you can watch giant waterfalls from the melting ice that look like Niagara Falls. And there are thousands of these. So now what's going to happen is that large pieces, bigger than ever in history, never in the history of the world, will you see pieces of ice break off and go into the ocean. And once that starts, and the ice is thinning, and the summers are hotter, you're going to have it pulled like a skid, greased right into the ocean. And one day we could go to bed in August or September thinking everything's fine, and the next day the ocean could rise an inch, 2 inches, a foot. It is entirely possible. We're into chaos theory. So it's not will we end up having all of our shorelines inundated. It's just when, and now rather than in the far future. I keep telling everyone this, and hopefully someone gets the message. If you doubt me, come down to Florida and let me show you what remains of the beaches with just a Category 1. What do you think is going to happen next year when we get a Category 2, 3, 4, 5? I'm going to report now from Indonesian correspondent George Roberts from NBC News. Quote, Jakarta sinking as water supplies dry up. Experts in Indonesia are preparing to build a huge wall to stop the ocean from swamping parts of Jakarta. Some suburbs in the capital already go underwater when there's a big tide, but the problem is expected to get even worse. Jakarta is sinking by up to 10 centimeters a year, and Indonesia's National Disaster Center says with oceans rising, large parts of the city, including the airport, will be inundated. Flooding and high tides are already causing problems for some residents in a city of 10 million. Cartoya's roadside food stall is swimming in about 30 centimeters of water. Quote, "It's been easier," he said. "This kind of flood is manageable, but hopefully it won't get any higher. The people here before, they couldn't even go to the market because of the flood, and the children couldn't go to school." They built a seawall in 2009, and guess what? Quote, "The ocean pushed its way right through the drains into people's homes. And but while some suburbs still go under and the roads are rivers, residents across town have the opposite problem. Jakarta's that live near a development in one of the many pushing skywards as Indonesia's economy booms, but the water supply in her suburb has disappeared. Because the development project next door sucks up the water stopped since the project started about 3 months ago. That's what caused it. I use a small water pump and no water flows. In the beginning, there was little water, but in the end, it just stopped. So what's happening? In one area, the ocean's coming in and flooding. In the other, because of these massive sky-rise buildings you see, these high-rises, they're pumping out all the water for the people. And when you do, you create a vacuum, and the vacuum and the pressure and the weight sinks it. So that's what's happening also. So it's happening everywhere. So I'm just giving you a heads up. Also on a environmental front, many people believe that President Obama had your interests at stake. Well, just look at the lack of ethics around the GMO salmon fiasco. According to John Enty of Forbes, will the President's Office of Science and Technology investigate the White House after violations of the Executive Office's guarantee of science integrity, or should he be investigated? The Genetic Literacy Project reports. Now, I won't go through this, but what it means is this. Right now, the FDA is allowing genetically engineered salmon to go forward. You're going to be eating it if you eat salmon in the near future, and it won't be labeled, so you won't know what kind you're getting. There's a lot of concerns we have for all genetic engineering. The science is not there anywhere at all in the world literature to support the safety and efficacy of genetically engineered foods. To the contrary, all the real independent science shows that it really is Frankenfoods. And as Bruce Levine told me, that can end up causing gene mutations in your own body. Now, what happened was the White House, through the president's assistance on this, sat on all the reports from Valerie Jarrett at the executive office. And then Human Health Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, who has connections with pharmaceutical companies, also downplayed all this. But a report shows that they weren't transparent. They didn't tell us the truth about the dangers. They said, oh, genetically engineered salmon and regular salmon are basically the same. They knew otherwise. They lied to us. So now a question is, who's going to investigate the White House when the White House is responsible for causing the problem? They support genetic engineering of food. They do not support organic or its labeling. And also, we're seeing the climate warm up, and some of the most beautiful places in America, in the mountains, are now being devastated. This is the latest from Madison, University of Wisconsin. Trees and the insects that eat them wage constant war. Quote, insects burrow and munch. Trees deploy lethal and disruptive defenses in the form of chemicals. But in a warming world, where temperatures and seasonal change are in flux, the tide of battle may be shifting in some insects' favor. In a report published yesterday in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, a team of scientists from the University of Wisconsin, Madison, reports a rising threat to the whitebark pine forest of the northern Rocky Mountains as native mountain pine beetles climb ever higher, attacking trees that have not evolved strong defenses to stop them. The white bark pine forests of the western United States and Canada are the forest ecosystem that occur at the highest elevation that sustains trees. It is a critical habitat for iconic species such as the grizzly bear, and plays an important role in governing the hydrology of the Mountain West by shading snow and regulating the flow of meltwater. Quote, warming temperatures have allowed tree-killing beetles to thrive in areas that were historically too cold for them most years. According to professor of entomology and a senior author of the report, quote, the tree species at these high elevations never evolve strong defenses. Well, a warming world has not only made it easier for the mountain pine beetle to invade new and defenseless ecosystems, but also to better withstand winter weather that is milder and erupt in large outbreaks capable of killing entire stands of trees, no matter their composition. A subject of much concern in the scientific community is the potential for cascading effects of white bark pine loss on mountain ecosystems. So, the average person in America doesn't understand this, but just a mountain, imagine going to the beautiful mountains up in north of Flagstaff or in that area, or over in New Mexico at 7,000 feet up around Santa Fe, or up in the mountains at 8,000 feet above Denver, which is 5,000 feet, and you see devastation everywhere. Now, when a tree is green and healthy, it can help withstand fire. When trees get decimated by the beetles, they become dry tinder, which is one of the reasons why in a hot climate, where it's hotter at higher altitudes, and the beetles are killing off the trees because there's no natural defense the trees have, then when fires do occur, which they will and have, they're going to be just devastating. And then what will our pristine forest at the higher altitudes be like? They'll be just moonscaped. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi, who's on the line now. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Just to kind of go along with kind of like the same context of what you've been talking about, I wouldn't have believed this if I didn't read this today. In the newspaper, this is from the New York Post today, Department of Education's grade charade. Now, we know that there are some awful teachers out there, and we kind of, the hush-hush is that we kind of put them in rubber rooms, and we just kind of, they kind of hang out there. Check this out. This is a new thing now with the Department of Education. The city has a secret weapon to rub out incompetent teachers, an eraser. If a teacher who's deemed a dud agrees to quit or retire before a termination trial, the Department of Education will wipe out all of their unsatisfactory ratings and voila, change them to satisfactory, thus helping that terrible teacher land a job elsewhere. I mean, I can't believe I'm reading this. This is what we've devolved to.
I had a workshop this afternoon. And I spoke with a teacher who's been teaching for 21 years. And the teacher told me that he was very concerned with what he sees the basic erosion of quality educational standards. And he said if you try to challenge the system, you're punished. He even talked about how he had been punished for challenging the system. So you do have good teachers. But good teachers have to teach in a system that encourages real educational standards, something we haven't had in 30 years. If in any other industry a person was grossly incompetent and adversely affected the environment they were in, and if they were removed from that position, that would be on their record, because anyone who went to hire someone should have a right to know if the person I'm hiring is capable or not. To be able to erase all the bad that a person has done, a teacher has done, means that a bad teacher who is fired for cause is going to end up someplace else being hired, and no one will know about their background. They'll actually think that the background was good. So the city, which is participating in this, is guilty of perpetrating a fraud And I believe it borders on not just immoral and unethical, but criminal. And later this week, I intend to do a series of commentaries that I've written over the last few days. I believe it's time that we pull back all the curtains and looked at what really is behind all of our movements. How we've ended up such an illiterate nation. How we've ended up trusting bankers. How we end up trusting economists and talking heads on television that back the bankers. How we end up with a military-industrial complex that does not in any way discourage terrorism, actually promotes terrorism. How we end up getting our basic rights taken away. All these major and important areas I'll be dealing with in depth, one at a time, each day. But it doesn't surprise me. A bad teacher should be able to be fired, just like any bad employee should be fired. And a good teacher should have the straitjacket taken off so they can teach the way that really encourages a child to learn, to question, to be prepared for the larger world, not just teaching them how to be better apt at taking tests. And right now, everything is skewed towards testing, as if the grade that you get on a test becomes a representative a moniker for the school or the state or the system. And it shouldn't be. The quality of knowledge imparted to the student should be the measure, and it's not. Right, Luann? Luann, yeah. We have time for one more comment or question.
Here's another interesting one from the New York Times, Gary. This is crazy. Health insurers raise some rates by double digits. This is starting to get scary. Health insurance companies across the country are seeking and winning double-digit increases in premiums for some customers, even though one of the biggest objectives of the Obama administration's health care law was to stem the rapid rise in insurance costs for consumers. Particularly vulnerable to the high rates are small businesses and people who don't have employer-provided insurance and must buy it on their own. This is horrific.
This was on the front page of today's New York Times, and I read the piece. Go back to when Obamacare was being argued. Here's what I said on it. I said that this should never be passed for several reasons. First, because the corporate left, the corporate Democrats, had sold out. The authentic left, those that really have ethics, had argued, shouldn't we have, at least for those who are poor or need it, a universal coverage? I certainly support that. But if you want private insurance and you want private medical care, you should also have that. So you can have a two-rail system. But we're not doing that. Obamacare does not prevent disease, nor does it better able to help a person when they are sick, because nothing that is fundamentally wrong with medicine was challenged. And a lot is fundamentally wrong with medicine, as you well know. Our whole system is broken. And it was all about the money. And it was always about the money. And every time we applied to testify before Congress upon any health care aspect, we were denied. The people allowed in to testify were always the people who were selected, the professors, the doctors, the high-profile names with a good pedigree who had already sold their soul for stock, for lecture fees, for patents, for research grants, to someone within that corporate milieu. So it's all a fraud. So this is just the beginning of the massive exploitation of the American public. And unfortunately, at this point, it's going to continue. It'll get worse before there's a chance to debate it openly and allow those of us who understand health care and all the politics of it to have a chance to have national open debates. We're out of time, Luann. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
I'm Gary Noll. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.